National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
A recent article in the online magazine The Cut, part of New York Magazine, featured an article entitled Stories from Real Women Who Regret Having Children, part of a rather long-time trend in secular media to denigrate motherhood, having children, and the family. This week on Register Radio, Andrea Pachotti-Bear, attorney, Register legal analyst, and mother of 10, well, she'd like a word. And then, we hear all the time about a resurgence in faith among young people. Well, in Boston, that resurgence is very real, and it's growing. We're joined by Register staff reporter Matt McDonald and Lindsay Hoggins, a member of Southie Totus Tuus, to tell us all about it. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News and host of Register Radio, joined once again, and as always, by my co-host, Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. How are you?
Very well, Matthew.
Well, let's put it this way. The Cut, as I was saying, is a New York Magazine site covering women's lives, as they say, and interests, quote, from politics, feminism, work, money, relationships, mental health, style, etc. The recent article, Stories from Real Women Who Regret Having Children, featured three women who regret their choice to have babies. This is part of a series of articles by the secular site, all focusing on babies and motherhood. The article claims that parent regret is more common than you might think. We're joined once again and happily by Andrea Pachotti-Bear, attorney, Register legal analyst, and director of the Conscience Project, who is also participating in a site event during this year's United Nations Commission on the Status of Women. And we're going to hear all about that, too, because this is an important discussion and it's actually germane to this article. Andrea, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me, Matthew.
It feels like you haven't been on for forever, so I'm always happy to welcome you.
No, it's great, and it's good to be back. And wow, what a lot of stuff to cover.
Fortunately, you're the person to do it. So let's start with this article, because I think it really raises a lot of questions on the part of people. I know that there was a pretty sharp response, I think that'd be safe to say, Shannon, in social media and from some of our contributors.
Yeah, absolutely. It touched a nerve, and I'm really interested to hear from Andrea, where she thinks this is really coming from. This is, in one sense, nothing new, but there just seems to be a critical mass of this sort of narrative that's out there right now.
Yeah, Shannon, you know, I don't want to imply a sinister motive for the editors of The Cut, but it sure does seem like, you know, this is focused on the et cetera part, which I translate as nonsense. Right. It's difficult. Life is difficult. And motherhood is not easy. And we need to be, you know, very clear with young women and with our daughters, especially about the challenge of motherhood, but also the joy that comes with it and the great rewards. I think that one of my good friends, Ashley McGuire, wrote in a piece that was highlighted in the Register about kind of looking at the different examples that were highlighted in the Cut's article, and really highlighting that this really has all the signifying the characteristics of women struggling with depression, and that instead of saying that they regret motherhood, it's that they're struggling with the early years of motherhood, and really, I think, gives us all an opportunity to think about what can we do to support young moms. It's a great thing that we see in our parishes every Sunday, with the mom and the dad that are struggling with a, you know, an antsy child or a hungry infant. What can we do as part of the church to support young moms and as part of a community to look around in our neighborhoods, in our extended family, and think about what can we help when women are you know, in the throes of it? Not to say that they should have regrets, but instead to know that they have support.
Yeah, and the idea, too, of motherhood, one has the impression, and you're a mom, obviously, many times a mom, but the idea of motherhood itself seems to be denigrated, to use that word again, but also it's like you have to make a choice. It's an either-or option for women.
No, and that's a really, I've tried to say this to as many people as I can hear. I think that most moms will say that they flourish as a woman because of motherhood and not in spite of. Now, obviously, there's a different narrative. One that the Cut is trying to create and promote that says that it's taking away from a woman's flourishing to be able to give of herself from something that's so natural. I think my friend Mary Hassan says we're built with room for another, you know, and to be able to bring a child into life. And we're just physically built for that vocation, for that calling. But it's a challenge because there are going to be some trade-offs. There are going to be times where you have to say, in the season of my life, I'm not going to be able to work 5, 6, 7, 8 hours on the weekend. I've got to dedicate to the needs of my children, my home, my family. And realizing that actually making those decisions is not limiting us as women, but actually giving us our full flourishing, because we have agency in being able to say, I'm going to direct my glance, my time, my attention to those that God has entrusted me to.
Andrea, your piece, which the headline of which is The Elegant Efficiencies of a Full House, a Response to the Critics of Large Families. And that phrase was one, when I read your piece, it immediately jumped out at me. And I wrote you to that effect, like it's just so well, so beautifully rendered. But that was in response, not to the Cut, but to a social media post sort of that, again, triggered a lot of people saying that, well, you can't possibly be a good parent when you have, you know, multiple children, right? But what I liked about your piece is the good news is at least people are talking about family life. And as Catholics, we really shouldn't respond to snark with snark. And your piece didn't do that. It talked about your own experiences as a mom of 10 and about things going wrong and children getting sick and trips getting turned upside down and things like that, but just the beautiful, unexpected things that happen. So you struck that tone. Was that difficult to do?
You know, I think that it's one that I've learned over time. Right. And you're absolutely right, Shannon, that there's so much snark in the world that we don't need to contribute to it. We are called to give something better, right, to offer a better answer and a better way of thinking about these difficulties. And oftentimes, you know, laden with humor and with humility, because, right, part of our learning and maturing as parents is to kind of take it in stride and to know that we aren't the ones in charge. God is actually the one in charge, and we need to sometimes let go in order to enjoy the ride. It is interesting, though, that whether it's the numbers game or just motherhood in general, I think that there's a big push, and maybe this is a consequence of post-Dobbs America, that, you know, abortion is relentless. And the desire to tell women that children are somehow something to be avoided, and it's really an opportunity for us to lean in and say, no, this is actually delightful, and it makes my life better to have these people in it, and I wouldn't be the full woman that I can be. And the person that I was responding to in the piece that you mentioned, Shannon, was also saying that you can't be a good professional if you have a lot of children, and I would push back hard on it to say, in my work, I think having children has made me a better lawyer. I see things with a wider lens. I pick up on nuance that I didn't, and some of that is just also being older. But I see it because as a mother, I notice the kid who's more quiet than normal, or the one who seems to be spiking a fever, and that is able to translate into the work that I do. To really be understanding what people are going through, what's motivating their positions, and to be able to speak into that instead of kind of continuing to have divisiveness or conflict, but really try to find resolutions to people's problems.
Yeah, and you are very keen on religious liberty, on parental rights, and you have a piece, Parental Rights Are a Cornerstone of American Law, reflecting on of your recent participation in an event at the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women. It was a side event co-sponsored by the U.S. As a member nation and several other civil society organizations. The title of the event was "What is a Woman? Protecting Women and Children from Gender Ideology." There is, it seems to me, a direct connection between this inability to define what a woman is and this assault on motherhood.
Absolutely. I mean, part of it is to undermine the unique aspect of being a woman, which is the ability to bring forth new life. But also, there's an issue about the attack on the role of parents in the lives of girls and young women, and especially that attack is found its strongest movement in gender ideology. If we look at our experience here in the U.S., parents have been excluded from social transition attempts by their young daughters and sons in schools and in medical institutions, been bullied into thinking that if they don't transition their young children quickly, those children may become suicidal or estranged. And really what I was saying at this great opportunity that I had, I'm so thankful to have had it, is the people that are most suited to accompany a young girl or a young woman struggling with gender confusion are her parents. Mm-hmm. With the exception of situations where there's genuine abuse.
Right.
But our presumption shouldn't be abuse in the home. Our presumption should be that these are the people who know a girl best and really want her genuine flourishing and are perfectly situated to walk with her through this legitimate, confused time and get her the tools that she needs as opposed to being sidelined or kept in the dark.
Well, Andrea, your piece again, Parental Rights Are a Cornerstone of American Law. You can find it at ncregister.com. Thanks so much and look forward to having you on again.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, when we come back, we're joined by Register staff reporter Matt McDonald and a member of Southi Totus Tuus, Lindsay Hoggins. It's Faith in South Boston. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.
Return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen here, as always, with Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Well, in February of 2023, Lindsay Hoggins, who lives in Boston, decided to give up something for Lent, and she chose a very interesting way to go about that. She decided to start a weekly young adults group in the basement of a Catholic church right near where she lives in South Boston. This was the start of Southi Totus Tuus. It's the name of the young adult group, and it has grown significantly over the years, and it is now something of a major haven for young professionals who find vibrant faith community in South Boston. We're joined by Lindsay Hoggins. Welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you for having me on today.
And we're also joined by the author of a great piece, Young Professionals Find Vibrant Faith Community in South Boston, Register staff reporter Matt McDonald. Matt, great to have you back as always.
Hi, Matthew. Thanks.
Well, Lindsay, let's start with you. This is perhaps not an absolutely innovative idea in the sense that we have seen these young youth groups before, but you're the first person I've ever actually heard of personally who started a group like this doing it for Lent. So first, congratulations on that. Congratulations on all the success you've had over these last few years. But let's start with you. What was it about this idea that really struck you?
So the group was actually started before I started going to it, but it was a lot different than it is today. My mom had actually saw it in the bulletin and suggested I join this group. But when I started going at Lent, I joke around now saying if I just went the first time, I probably wouldn't have gone back. But because I committed to it for all 6 weeks during Lent, I started to form friendships. But as Matt wrote in the article, there were about 10 people on a good day. So some weeks I went and there were even fewer. And now, 3 years later, we have over 200 people showing up every Wednesday. And I now help, for the last year, I've helped lead the group with a few others and our priest, Father Peter.
Well, what drew you to this group?
I think I was honestly looking for something deeper and more meaningful than just at Lent, you know, everyone gives up sweets. And I think I knew deep down I wanted to connect back to my faith, and I didn't necessarily know how to. And starting going to this group was the start of growing more in union with our Lord.
Mm-hmm. Matt, I got a tip about this from a couple of my nephews who are regular attendees of this Wednesday night. And when I signed this story to you, I was a little bit worried, oh, maybe he's going to get there and it won't be that big a thing. But what were your impressions when you attended one of these evenings?
Well, my first impression was when I went to the church, which is Gate of Heaven Church in South Boston, and I couldn't find a place to park in the parking lot. So on a Wednesday night, that's not something you expect. Southie's a difficult place to park in, no matter what, the whole city of Boston is. But I did expect at least the parking lot would have spaces. I actually had to park at another church. I think actually Lindsay gave me the tip to park at St. Bridget's and walk the 10 minutes to Gate of Heaven, which gives you an idea of just how many people. So a church group with 10 people, as Lindsay described, is something you'd expect. You don't expect, in my case, 120 people or even more than 200, as they've been getting recently.
Yeah, Matt, one of the names that keeps coming up in this is Father Peter Sharippa. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. What's his role and how has he been so important to this?
He's the new, somewhat new, parochial vicar at the combined parish of Gate of Heaven and St. Bridget's in South Boston. And he did not begin the young adults group, but he took it over when he became parochial vicar. And I think Lindsay could actually speak to this better than I can about the changes he made and the energy that he brought to it.
Yeah, definitely. Father Peter has a very vibrant spirit to him. He's on fire about the faith. And I think in a lot of ways, my generation grew up having priests that were a lot older than us. And to have someone that is somewhat more of a peer, just like a few years older than a lot of us, he's a lot more relatable. He grew up outside of Boston, as many of the people in the group did, and can relate to us and share his experience with us, as well as show us how much he's in love with God. And I think that brings a lot of people like closer to God, and just seeing a young person on fire for the faith has really helped, as well as he's included more adoration and confession availability, not just on Monday nights for the young adults, but he also offers it, or on Wednesday nights he offers it for the young adults. He also offers it parish-wide on Monday nights. So just having it more easily accessible throughout the parish has really, I think, helps many people grow in their faith as well.
Lindsay, can you just describe the general format of these evenings?
Yeah. So on a typical Wednesday night, it starts with 30 minutes of Eucharistic adoration, and we have a few really talented singers singing live music, worship music for us, as well as Father Peter offers confession during that time, and sometimes he has visiting priests come to help listen to confessions as well, just because the group has grown so much. And then following the adoration and confession time, we go downstairs to the basement of Gate of Heaven, and there's a little bit of social time, and then we gather for Father Peter gives a 15 to 20 minute talk. Usually related to the catechism in some way. Currently, he's doing a series on the sacraments. And then following that, again, it's a social time. Some people stay in the church and socialize, and some people go across the street to one of the bars called The Playwright, and people continue to socialize throughout the night there.
Yeah, so it's obviously when we talk about the younger generations, and I'm older than you are, so you're counted as younger generations, we hear a lot about that fewer young people are being drawn into the faith, and yet we are hearing more anecdotally that young people are being attracted, that they're drawn to the Catholic faith in particular, but religion. What's been your experience as a Catholic, but also living in what can be considered a very secular time?
Yeah, definitely. I think coming right out of college, I lived more of that classic Southie lifestyle that many people in the secular world do. But I think what draws a lot of people to the Catholic faith and this group in particular is the sense of community and fellowship and having more deeper, meaningful conversations with one another. I think that has been the biggest draw, is just adult, meaningful friendships and community that isn't necessarily as easily available in the secular world.
Yeah, Matt, can you follow up on that? I'm especially interested based on your study of this, for this story, but also this group.
People in their 20s are the most unchurched people in America. And that's particularly true among Catholics. And I think a basic idea of people at this stage of life is that they're leading self-centered lives and self-directed. They're working on their careers. Some of them are leading hedonistic lives. And so it's shocking to see a huge number of people showing up on a Wednesday night at a Catholic church for adoration and then a talk by a priest. And the atmosphere of the thing is interesting, too, because one of the surprising things is everybody was seated on those metal chairs, which are not horrible, but they're not totally comfortable. Everyone was seated attentive, looking forward, nobody was on his cell phone, and wanting to be there and paying attention. It's not something that I expected to see with that many people in their 20s and early 30s.
Yeah, Matt, I loved the piece that you wrote for the Register. And one of the great features of it are the photos. A shout out to Bryce Vickmark, who took those photos for us. And they really capture, this looks like a lot of fun. The social part, I know you went, I believe you went to the pub afterwards and talked to some people. So that's important, too. Just that social element, young people meeting one another. Can you talk about how that fits into this whole evening?
Yeah, one of the guys I spoke to told me that this group evangelizes in a natural way. It's not churchy. Churchy. That's a very interesting word, church hyphen Y. So it's not people preaching at each other. It's people spending time with each other, getting to know each other. And, oh, by the way, they're all interested in God, too. I did go to the pub afterwards, was there for a long time, actually, and a lot of people were there for a long time. And there's this sense of personal connection. There's conviviality, but it's not a party scene. It's fun, but it's not totally self-directed. It's people making connections with each other and making connections with each other in a wholesome way.
Yeah, Lindsay, you made an observation in the piece that you felt, and other lay organizers of the group thought, that people would stop coming once Father Chirripa addressed what you describe as unpopular church teachings, but the opposite actually happened. Can we talk about that briefly?
Yeah, definitely. Before the sacraments unit, Father Peter did a unit on the moral life, and I think in conversations with Father Peter, we thought this could draw people away because he was going to speak the truth, whether people had never heard it before or wouldn't like to hear the answer. Because I think we're fed in the secular world you know, this is the truth, or you should believe this. And Father Peter always goes back to the Bible and to the Catechism and pulls actual proof and backs up his statements for each of his talks. So I think that really gives people that attend the group the substance that they need for hearing the truth on these kind of controversial topics, especially related to the moral life.
Yeah. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for your time and for the work that I know you put into this. And also be assured of our prayers for all of you in this group. And Matt, thanks for the superb reporting as always.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Jen.
Of course, thanks for having me on.
You can find Matt's piece, Young Professionals Find Vibrant Faith Community in South Boston, at ncregister.com. Well, that's it for this week for Register Radio. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks again for joining us here on EWTN. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please, take care, and God bless.